The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves. With beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Everybody is entitled to their opinion. But with that being said, my phone's in my back pocket right now. If whoever has anything to say to me, feel free. 773-899-6071. So if you want to interview, there you have it. Please do.
Yeah, I wonder if any Bulls fans went out and Marvin's roomed Jimmy Butler today.
Yeah, boy, how about that? Have you called Jimmy Butler yet?
I have not. I've been working up the nerve to call him. I mean, I've called and I've hung up, and one time he answered, I was like, oh my God, and I hung up. No, none of that actually happened. I have not called Jimmy Butler.
How about the Instagram post, though, of him actually, like, FaceTiming people that were, like, calling him and whatnot?
This guy's fantastic.
He's awesome, dude. Seriously speaking, like, this is, for this franchise, I don't think we've seen we've seen, you know, goofy, sort of entertaining, fun-loving players in the past, but never.
They've been like Michael Beasley caliber, though.
Yeah, but never a guy like this who is like legitimately one of the best 10 to 15 players in the league.
Now, did you listen to his presser today?
I listened to the end, probably about the last 10 minutes of it or so.
Okay,
the last 5-10 minutes.
So mostly the parts that he was speaking then.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that I really liked is that he sounds so sincere, and he sounds like such a believer in not just the team and the direction of the franchise, but also the city. And I think that's incredibly important. I mean, there's just, you know, it's not just lip service, I think, or it doesn't seem like it's canned or anything. There's something that comes off as very genuine and sincere. Granted, I mean, I haven't been around Jimmy Butler in a locker room. I don't know if this is, you know, business as usual for him or whatnot, but apparently, you know, he's been great in the Chicago community for the Bulls in the past, and it's, you know, it really seems like he's going to be a positive addition, not just to the franchise, but to the community, which is, I think, big, too, in losing Zach and the work he did for that school for the deaf and having that kitchen opened up for them and helping with that. And, if you know, in talking about getting free agents and how he's already, you know, kind of on the recruiting trail there, and I think you have someone who is already, you know, so committed and such a believer, I think that could make such an impact for this team this summer.
Yeah, and he's, you know, and I mentioned this on the ride with Royce with Brian Murphy filling in for Patrick this afternoon, that when he says something like that, like, you know, I'm going to recruit guys and, you know, some guys that might be better than me and that sort of thing, like, you could tell it's legit. I mean, this guy, he's a multi-time All-Star. He's an Olympian. So, I mean, he has relationships with some of the prominent best players in the NBA. And so, I mean, I take him at his word. Now, I don't know who he could go get, but I believe him when he says that he thinks he can do that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we've had a guy like that where it's been, you know, an honest thing that they could say. And it just doesn't sound like something that'll just make the fans happy, you know, and works for the team to hopefully sell tickets. And the nice thing is, a lot of times, I mean, especially when, you know, when LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Carmelo Anthony all hit the free agency in 2010, that was their first time after their rookie contracts when they really had control over their destiny.
Right.
And they had to wait till they hit their prime and got there. If the Timberwolves already have a guy who's already, you know, able to get out and recruit guys like that without having to wait another 5-6 years and hope that everyone, you know, not only just reaches their free agency like that, but also reaches that level of clout in the league where they are able to recruit those guys that they came up with in AAU or they played against in college. So it's kind of a cool thing to have.
Yeah. I'm kind of lost for words. I mean, it's just, I mean, we've seen the highs and lows of this franchise. I mean, mostly lows, if we're being fully honest, the last, you know, 12, 13 years. But this is just, this seems like a really unique situation, circumstance in that you're getting, you're making a trade for a guy in his prime. I mean, because even if you go back to the big trade in 03 that McHale made when he brought Spree and Sam in, I mean, Spree and Sam were good players at that time, but they were older players. I mean, they were older. I mean, KG
Cassell was fine. Spreewell was low-key washed.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at it and what he did. I mean, yeah, he was absolutely the third banana there because, you know, Wally got hurt. But it's arguable that Irvin Johnson was more central to that team and more critical than Sprewell was. Because they don't have a center. They get rolled by everyone, especially that Kings team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like Spree was that guy that if somebody else was having an off night, he was able to pick up the slack. But if you were looking for Golden State Latrell Sprewell, you weren't getting it.
I mean, not
you weren't getting it. Yeah.
Raw field goal percentage by itself is the best barometer of how good a player was. He shot like 41% that year, which is not what you want out of your starting shooting guard.
Yeah. But yeah, so I've that's probably the last time where I could think where the franchise made a move where you were like, okay, this is
that kind of turned heads and piqued interest, I think.
Right. You know, and not just from a local level, but from a national level too. I mean, that this Jimmy Butler trade turned a lot of people's heads all over, you know, the NBA planet, I guess, if you will. So a lot of people are noticing it. Certainly Jimmy turned a lot of heads in the press conference this afternoon.
I mean, I think Kevin Martin was probably the last one bigger outside free agent, but even then he had finally started to travel around in the NBA. He was getting a little bit older and there were certainly concerns of his game being dated, you know, with them taking it away, the swipe through and all that. So and then we saw how quickly, you know, he really kind of depreciated over time, especially with, I mean, mostly with injuries. He was still fairly productive, but he was what he was and certainly not on Jimmy Butler's level. And to actually get a player that can come in and make an immediate impact like that is going to be pretty cool.
Once again, we threw out a flyer for some questions from our listeners.
There's a theme.
Yeah. A lot of the questions we got were fairly similar. We got free agency, of course, coming up this weekend. So I think that's where everybody's mind is kind of focused now at this point. We'll start with Taylor. Taylor says, if the Wolves keep Ricky, talking about Rubio, of course, do you trust Tyus to be the backup point guard? I think he deserves more court time. It's cliche, but the guy is a gamer. On that last part, I will say I do think Tyus is the cliche gamer. I mean, we've seen, going back to his days at Duke, the kid is not afraid to make a big play or take a big shot. He doesn't seem to, you know, crumble up into the fetal position in those moments. So he's that is something I'd definitely give him. But I don't know. I have long felt, even before he stepped on an NBA court, that Tyus' ceiling was as a backup point guard in the NBA, which is nothing he should have to apologize for. But
I mean, that makes him a top 60 point guard, top 90 point guard in the world at worst. So that's not really a bad spot to be in.
Right. So I guess the question, I mean, do you, at this point with this roster right now, and obviously we got free agency to still think about over the next couple of weeks, but do you trust him to be the backup point guard at this point?
To be the backup point guard?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that. I think he wants some of the little more size. He's always going to have that built-in weakness with his defense. I think that's always going to be a struggle. With that said, he does see the floor very well. He understands how to run an offense, and he is capable of making shots when they're there. And there is some value in that. So I think he belongs on the court. I don't know that – is he really the backup point guard on a playoff team? Unless that point guard is, you know, upper echelon NBA point guard. Unless, you know, you have Damian Lillard, Kyrie Irving, Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry, Chris Paul in front of him. I mean, that's kind of the only way I see that that's okay. And the Wolves aren't going to get a point guard in that class. So I think they need to do something else. And I mean, honestly, have depth. Because, I mean, it's a long season. Someone's going to get banged up. There's always going to be an opportunity for, you know, the next man, as they say, to step up. And I think that's where Tyus can thrive. And he's always going to be ready. And he's going to do what's asked of him.
Yeah, I I tend to agree. I mean, I think it just it really depends on who your number one point guard is. I mean, if you're rolling with a guy that you're only looking to get, you know, 25 to 28 minutes out of every night, then you probably want somebody else in that spot, because now you're looking at asking Tyus to play 20 plus minutes, and I just don't know at this point in his career if he's really ready to do that on a consistent basis. So it would have to be, like you said, I think one of the elite point guards in the league in front of him. So that way he's only you're only putting him in for 12, 13, maybe at the most 14 or 15 minutes in a game. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. John says, assuming any free agent that is on the market, then parentheses, it says no KD or Steph, would accept a fair deal, how would you spend it? All for Lowry or Patty Mills and Jamichael Green?
Now, there are like two other questions that are connected to this. At Smo Mike also asked, who is a reasonable option at power forward currently outside the organization? Goose Oberstar asked, likelihood of the Kyle Lowry dream becoming a reality? And Zach Pratt at me, Zach P., what's a better use of the Wolves' resources, getting stud for multiple bench pieces for depth? Those are all pretty similar questions, right?
Right.
Yep. I think we can kind of attack those in pieces.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough because this is, in terms of free agency, this is probably their only, I mean, we've been talking about this for weeks. This is probably their only window to really go out and spend money before they have to pay Towns, pay Wiggins. You know, in 2 years, you probably have to figure out what you're going to do with Jimmy Butler, obviously. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, if you have the money, there is sort of that, you know, that itch to, well, we have 30, if you know, depending on what they do with Ricky, and obviously, but there's always going to be that tendency to think, well, we have 30-plus million in cap space. Why not? But at the same time...
And you're talking if they flip Ricky?
Right, right.
My thought on that now, I mean, especially watching the salary cap gymnastics Daryl Morey did to get Chris Paul to Houston, is that you... And versus what Magic Johnson did to the Lakers in flipping D'Angelo Russell for Brooke Lopez, is that I think you only really want to do that salary dump if you're creating space for something you know is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When you have something pending, rather than... Well, we could do this, so let's clear this space. We don't really have a backup plan if this falls through.
Right.
But if you know 100% that you have, you know, a fish on the line, I think then you make... God, that was such a Minnesota analogy to make. Man. And then you do something there. So I think I would prefer them to, you know, just approach it smartly and, you know, kind of assess, you know, what's happening for you, what isn't happening for you as far as free agency. So if you can land a few key parts with the cap space that you do have... And then say down the road you do have something else that's developing, then I think you look into make those moves to, you know, clear cap space with the contracts that you do already have on the books. I think that's the smartest way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for me because I mean I think Kyle Lowry would be terrific here. And this is no disrespect to Ricky at all. But I mean, Kyle Lowry's a better player. I mean, I know, you know, the Ricky truthers aren't going to want to hear that. And, you know, I am as much a Ricky Rubio fan as anybody. I want him to do well. I want him to be in a great situation.
And he's a fantastic, likable person and player.
Yes. But I question if some people are clamoring to the idea of hanging on to Ricky or like kind of like what we talked about off air throughout the week, is they want to hang on to him for sentimental reasons more so than basketball reasons.
Right. I mean, there's a way to improve this team and upgrade. I think you have to take that. I mean, of course, everything depends on what the money looks like and all that. But,
right.
I mean, the Wolves will have a real chance to improve this team. And I think what everyone can agree upon, whether you dislike Rubio, you love Ricky Rubio, or you're in the middle, you think he's a great player, you know, like where we're at, kind of right in the middle there.
Yep.
I mean, I really do think you have to look at those options and agree that there are ways to improve this team, and they need to take advantage of that. I mean, if we want them all to, you know, to make the playoffs, because I think that's what everyone in this conversation is focused on, is getting back to the playoffs and to start winning again after all these years.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that if it takes a situation where you have to move Ricky because you feel like you can go and get someone, and again, like you said, it's important. I think it's important to play it smart. I don't think you just dump Ricky for the sake of dumping him.
And it's clear by now that they're not going to do that, because right. If they were just going to dump him,
they would have done it a year ago.
They would have done it 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think there's a little bit of a sentiment that out there or sort of a notion that, well, you just under no circumstance can Ricky Rubio be moved. And it's kind of like, sure, there are circumstances.
How many players in this league are like that, though? I mean, there's Towns, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant probably is in there, Steph Curry, LeBron, you probably, you know, have untouchable all the time. Right. There isn't a long list of guys who are untouchable. Jimmy Butler is a top 15 player, and he got traded.
Yeah, he just got traded here.
Paul George is another top whatever player in this league, and he's going to be traded. Chris Paul is one of the greatest point guards of all time, and he got traded. There are very few players who are actually untouchable. And one thing I look at, too, and as far as, you know, a market for moving Rubio, this conversation has gotten fun. How many of the potential destinations that were talked about for Rubio, how many of those teams filled their point guard needs somewhere else now? So I'm really curious to see what the market would even be. So maybe if the Wolves, I don't know if I want to say they waited too long, because Sacramento drafted a point guard. Mm-hmm. They have De'Aaron Fox. Dallas has a point guard now, and they're rumored to be tied to him as well as Sacramento.
Yep.
Utah now, I mean, I think is still in the conversation, even though it obviously sounds like they're going to approach Jordan Hill. Houston just filled their point guard. I mean, do you wait till the deadline, if that even makes sense? You know, and talk right. to the Clippers about Patrick Beverley, depending on what they do and where their season goes. I mean, there aren't a lot of options anymore, and there wasn't a robust market for him to begin with, and I think we've seen it shrink over just this last week.
Yeah, and I think it's going to depend on It might depend on what some of these free agent point guards do. I mean, where does George Hill go? Does he stay with Utah? Does he sign with San Antonio? Then that maybe, you know, opens up a vacancy in Utah. What does Drew Holiday do? What does Jeff Teague do? You almost kind of want to see where a lot of these guys are going to go, and there aren't. You have these free agent point guards that are out there, and it's a pretty good crop. And, I mean, obviously we can talk about Kyle Lowry in a second too, but it's a pretty good crop of point guards in terms of the depth of the free agents that are going to be available. But you don't really have, aside from the teams that might lose those particular players, you don't really have a lot of teams that are in need of point guards.
It's not really a seller's market.
Right. I mean, you just saw, I mean, like you said, Sacramento, they drafted De'Aaron Fox. Dallas gets Dennis Smith Jr. The Knicks, even, their name is, you know, they've been tied to Ricky Rubio rumors since Ricky came into the league, since Ricky was drafted,
yep.
for that matter. They draft, you know, Frank Ntilikina. Now, I mean, Phil Jackson got fired, which we have to talk about that, too.
Oh, yeah.
This week.
This episode's going to be fun.
Yeah. You know, that was a Phil Jackson pick, so who knows what the Knicks actually have in store for Frank Ntilikina.
Now, one thing that they could look at, these other teams, is that, okay, well, yeah, we have this young point guard. You know, maybe by summer league they go, okay, well, maybe we should bring in, you know, a veteran on a friendly contract who can hold down the fort for a couple of years, and we can assess what direction we want to go.
Right.
I mean, I think that would make a lot of sense. I mean, what have the Nuggets done? Nuggets haven't done anything with their point guard situation, because clearly they whiffed on Moutier.
Yeah, Moutier is, boy, is he bad. The Nuggets are kind of an interesting team to watch, too, as far as free agency goes and where they sort of want to go, because there were rumors that they were, you know, maybe trying to get Paul George at the trade deadline back in February. And, you know, I saw a rumor about, you know, I saw Paul Millsap rumor a few days ago, I think. I don't know how old it was or not, but.
Well, even going back to last summer with Dwayne Wade, I mean, Dwayne Wade basically used the Nuggets to leverage the Bulls into giving him a deal.
Right.
I mean, so it really seems like the Nuggets are right now. As young and interesting as I think that team is, it's clear that the rest of the NBA doesn't really see it.
Right.
But the thing is, what do you want from Denver? Do you want Kenneth Faried? I wouldn't. I do not want any part of Kenneth Faried.
Nope.
Gary Harris? I mean, if they didn't just trade for Jimmy Butler, I would say absolutely. But you don't need Gary Harris and Jimmy Butler, because you want Gary Harris on the court, mm-hmm. if you have him as much as possible. And that's just not going to happen here.
Yeah. Okay, let me do this. I'm going to run a couple names by you. They're going to be free agents.
We are still on the same question, so this counts.
So I'll just throw a few names at you. Probably don't want to think too much about, you know, rather or not they would actually want to come here, but just in terms of how you see them fitting here, I'll get your thoughts. All right, Jermichael Green.
I like Jermichael Green. I would be all about Jermichael Green.
Okay.
I feel like, though, he's going to have a lot of interest, and that might push his, you know, his price up a little bit, but sure. All right, go on.
Kyle Lowry.
Yep, I'm here for that. I mean, here's the thing. I think regular season Kyle Lowry's a max player. Playoff Kyle Lowry is like a 12 to 15 million a year player. So whatever the medium is there.
Okay. I think we share the same opinion on George Hill. Jeff Teague.
I'm fine with Jeff Teague. And here's the thing. I think people who like Jeff Teague understand why people don't like Jeff Teague. Like, he's not the strongest shooting point guard. I think he's pretty average last time I looked.
Mm-hmm.
He's right about 36-37%, which in today's NBA is fine. In the past, it was 35%. So, I mean, 5-10 years ago, he probably would have been elite. And he's not now. But, I mean, I think he's okay. I think he likes the ball in his hands a lot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I liked watching him on those Hawks teams, and those Hawks teams still move the ball fantastically with him on the court. And so, honestly, I mean, Jeff Teague would not be the worst thing in the world to happen to this team. Although I know we're going to get comments saying that it would be. But they could do a lot worse than Jeff Teague.
P.J. Tucker.
Gosh, P.J. Tucker. Yeah, I mean, I think his defense is always useful. I don't think you can have enough help on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might give them some fun options in exploring, you know, the three-guard, three-forward lineup. Because they do. I look at Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins as combo guard forwards.
Yeah.
I see them all as perimeter players. I don't really see them as having, you know, one defined position.
Those guys, I mean, Jimmy and Andrew Wiggins, they seem like they're basically interchangeable between the two and the three.
Right.
At that
big
point,
shooting guard, Jimmy guards them, big small forward, Jimmy takes them. I mean, this isn't really that hard. I'm fine with that.
Lost my train. Mike Dunleavy Jr. I saw this from Doogie. That there might be some interest there.
Well, I got to shout out my guy, Patrick Fendelin, if he's listening to this, who I think single-handedly made Mike Dunleavy Jr. the single most Googled hawk in the state of Minnesota. Because this goes back to his Marquette days, I believe. Or is that Steve Novak? That might have been Steve Novak. Anyway, I think...
Yeah, because Dunleavy was a Duke kid.
Yeah, that's right. I should know that. I've watched Duke forever. Yeah, I like Mike Dunleavy. I think he could have a good role in this team. I don't think you can have too many veteran presences, especially guys who just know how to, you know, hit shots. And I think it's one thing that they talk about with Jimmy Butler. Is this guy, you know, he's worked his way into the NBA as the 30th pick.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way that Tibbs saw him, you know, work his way up really endeared him to him. And I think having another guy around in the locker room who could show the young guys, you know, how it's done. And that was one thing that's missing. That was missing with Tayshaun Prince, Andre Miller, and Kevin Garnett is, you know, they could show up for work at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
But, you know, come 7 o'clock for game time, they weren't really doing much.
Yeah. Physically, they were just so limited in terms of what they could actually do.
And I think those guys could actually provide the on-court guidance still. I mean, you probably don't see a ton of Mike Dunleavy Jr. on this team, but he still comes in, hits a few shots. So, yeah, I think if the number's right and the years are right, yeah, I'm fine.
Kyle Korver.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
Arguably one of the greatest three-point shooters of all time.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Korver and Dunleavy is that they both played for Tibbs.
Yeah.
In Chicago.
Weren't they both part of the bench mob?
I don't know. Were they in Chicago? I don't know if they were ever in Chicago at the same time.
I think
though.
They might have missed by a year or so.
Yeah. Because Korver was there first.
Yep.
And then Dunleavy came later, I think. I think Dunleavy was like essentially the Korver replacement.
I think that sounds right. Kirk Heinrich was really the only common thread there. And Kirk Heinrich is probably one of the most longest tenured Bulls of all time.
I think he's like, was it like three different stints with the Bulls?
Something like that, yeah.
I know it was more than one.
Two stints with the Hawks as well.
Yeah. Okay, here's a big name that's Obviously, it's been thrown around.
Kevin Durant would be fantastic, Manny. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, LeBron James in 2018 would be great, too.
He's too old. I mean, this team's better off.
Paul Millsap.
Gosh, we had a good conversation on Twitter about this. Mm-hmm. Me and the Twitterverse. I don't know if you were in on that as much.
I don't know if I was in on
that. No, okay. Yeah, it's a lot of money. I mean, he's going to be making about $40 million, almost $40 million in his age 37 season. And you figure he's going to look for his big payday. I think we've talked about for a long time, though, a Draymond Green, Paul Millsap type would be fantastic this team.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, do you do that knowing that, I mean, you have Jimmy Butler's bird rights, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And you essentially have Cat and Wiggins for the next 4 or 5 years controlled guaranteed. No, 5-6. Longer than that, yeah.
Yeah.
So it makes me uneasy knowing how much it would take to get him.
I just feel like
the basketball fit's fantastic.
Yeah, the fit is perfect. About as close to perfect as you can ask for, but I just feel like if you hand Paul Millsap the max, and this is probably something you'd have to be careful with Kyle Lowry too, is if you get those guys, okay, great, they're going to help. They instantly make you better. But I feel like you're really handcuffing yourself to get even better if you need to.
And you're married to that team then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if anything goes wrong, you don't really have a lot of outs on that team. And I think, I mean, Kyle Lowry's game, I'm more comfortable with that.
Yeah, me too.
Knowing that he's 31 already.
Mm-hmm.
So you're paying him probably until he's 35 or 36. A lot of money to do so. I mean, the nice thing is, you know, when you see point guards like Ty Lawson or Isaiah Thomas, eventually, when these point guards who their game is so much predicated on their athleticism and their ability to get to the rim, once that speed burst goes, that's it. I think Kyle Lowry can adapt and adjust and develop a bit of an old man game to that. I mean, if Paul Millsap, I mean, as he gets older, I mean, and slower, I mean, and can he still hit shots? I mean, if he can still hit shots, be a capable defender.
Yeah,
that's fine, but do you want a role player at the tune of $40 million a year?
Right, and the biggest thing, the best thing about Paul Millsap, what makes him terrific now is his versatility because, I mean, obviously he can defend in the post. If you need him to...
He can guard 3 to 5.
If you need him to step out on the perimeter and guard certain wing players, he's capable of doing that, but at 35, 36... making $38 to $40 million a year, is he going to still be capable of doing that? And you're probably, at that point, you're probably going to need that versatility from him more than ever.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, of course, a lot of that would depend on, you know, can you keep Butler? Can you keep, you know, Wiggins and Towns and everyone happy there? And whatever else you do with the point guard situation. I just feel like they do need to add depth, and I'm a firm believer that Gorgui Dieng is a fine player. I still think we still think that he is best suited as the first big off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
But this team needs to figure out its long-term point guard situation.
Yeah.
I mean, the team has said all the right things as far as Rubio, but I don't think anyone's buying that right now as far as, you know, Rubio being the long-term point guard here.
Yeah.
I mean, especially just given the way that the NBA is trending, it just seems like it would make more sense to solidify the point guard position because it is so important today. And
yeah.
I mean, if they get smart with their, if they are smart with their second round picks and their draft picks, if they get smart with their draft picks, they could possibly find, you know, a big in the draft that they can plug in to be, you know, they're serviceable for. Because ultimately it might not matter if you have Towns, Wiggins, Butler, and if you get a good point guard. I mean, it really might not matter who you put in at the four.
Yeah, because I feel like a power forward, I mean, obviously we just talked about the price tag that's going to be on Millsap. I mean, he's sort of an outlier in this particular case. But I feel like a contributing power forward is easier to find on the cheap than the type of point guard that I think this team is going to need long-term going forward. I mean, Ricky's on a nice deal, but Ricky, 6 years in the league now, he kind of is what he is. So he essentially... I mean, I think Ricky is making about what he should be making in terms of just the kind of player that he is. Now, some people are going to say, well, he's on a really friendly deal. Okay, well, it's a friendly deal because it's not too much.
Yeah,
I guess exactly. If that makes sense. It's not really a...
And it was signed, you know, almost 3 years ago.
Right.
And
I mean, Kemba Walker's on a friendly deal.
They signed their deals at the same time.
Right.
It was just, I think, about a week or two, within a week or two.
I think is Kemba making a little bit less? It was about, it was similar, but I thought Kemba got maybe a few million less.
Somewhere in there. It's pretty negligible in the grand scheme of things. But I think one nice thing, I mean, if you point to Rubio and say, hey, he shot 41% last year. That's great. He's finally turned the corner. Well, I mean, at this point, you'd also be selling high on him. His value, I don't think, has ever been this high. And if you could find someone who's willing to bite on that and doesn't say, well, let's see how next season goes, because you don't even know if that's going to hold. I mean, he puts in a ton of work on his shot, and you clearly see how much he's worked on it, you know, through the course of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But you're betting on him either sustaining that clip or improving it, which is kind of what they need him to do yet, because shooting hasn't become less important in the NBA. I think all along we had said, well, if he just gets to 40%, that's fine. That's all they need. But I think a lot of that came from the Kevin Love era, when they did have Kevin Martin and Kevin Love, who were both 40% three-point shooters.
Mm-hmm.
You could cover that up a little bit. On a team that has just a dearth of shooting, I think you really do need to find as much of it as you can.
Yeah, and I was chatting with Phil Mackey about this the other day. To me, it just seems like with what you have now with Towns, Wiggins, Butler, I mean, what Ricky brings to the table as a distributor and, you know, a floor leader, and he gets the offense going and he plays good defense. I feel like with the addition of Jimmy Butler, I'm not saying that what Ricky brings to the table isn't important, but I feel like what Ricky brings to the table is less of a necessity now than what it was before the Jimmy Butler trade.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, we always talked about, well, his defense, you know, was so important because Wiggins and LaVine aren't capable defenders yet.
Right.
But Jimmy Butler is a potential all-defensive NBA player. So I think you look at that and you go, well, I mean, and I'd say perimeter defense is more important than point guard defense.
Mm-hmm.
If you have good perimeter defense, I think you can hide shoddy point guard defense. You look at someone like Kyle Lowry, who is a reputable point guard defender as it is. So, I mean, there are George Hill is too.
Right.
And so there are guys on the market who can play defense there. So you can cover that up, and it's a lot of guys can make plays.
Yeah, and I just feel like Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins, who are capable three-point shooters, but they're not. It's not what they're known for. If you can add a point guard who doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time and can be a good catch-and-shoot guy, if Jimmy Butler has the ball in his hands and he's trying to make a play, you have a guy that's open and ready to hit a shot in a catch and shoot situation, which is something that Ricky still, even though his shooting has improved a little bit, that's still something he really struggles with.
He takes the shot confidently, which is what you want,
mm-hmm.
but he just doesn't knock it down as reliably as I think he would like.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, as you were saying that, I'm thinking Patty Mills, if Patty Mills were younger.
Yeah.
Because he's not the youngest. He's not old, but he's not the youngest guy in the world.
Yeah, I think he's 28.
Yeah, right about there. So I think if you're thinking long term, I mean, Patty Mills is who Patty Mills is.
Right.
He's a fine player, but he's not going to become a great player.
Yeah, and I feel like Patty Mills, and I would love Patty Mills to be on the team.
Oh, yeah, don't get that twisted.
But, you know, I do feel like Patty Mills, he's kind of like Gorgie Jang in that if he's starting for you, okay. But you would much rather him be your backup point guard or, you know, a sixth man type of role. A guy who can come in and hit shots. And
do you have any more free agents?
No, that was it.
Oh, perfect. Because that segues nicely into Jacob Wozniak's question. Who would be your, and this is at Jake Woz with two Zs, who would be your ideal sixth man for the Wolves this upcoming season? And I mean, we were talking about this right before we started taping, and like you said, and I agreed, there really doesn't seem to be one on the roster now.
No, there isn't one on the roster right now.
I don't know that I want to bring Shabazz Muhammad to be sixth man.
I'm not touching Shabazz with all due respect to him, I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole with a sixth man role.
And
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to run over this one more time. Shabazz, he's fine, I think, if he's your ninth, 10th man.
Yep.
Just fine in that role. I think that, you know, in the kind of the famine times we've seen since, you know, he's been in the league, his game hasn't grown.
He's the same guy he was 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's still lefty hook shot. I mean, he talked about a right hook shot, but there just really isn't that discretion in the shot selection. His shot isn't consistent. When he's hitting 43% of his threes, he's fantastic and a monster. Mm-hmm. But you see when defenses take away that hook shot, he doesn't have a step back or another counter move. He hasn't really hasn't molded himself, you know, as far as, you know, his game goes to becoming a better NBA player. He's improved his body a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been in fantastic shape ever since his sophomore season. And he's been a good character guy in the locker room, which makes you wonder what the heck they were talking about at UCLA. But his game just has not improved. And I think that if this team wants excellence and, you know, they know what they need. They need shooting. They need to, you know, improve the defense. Shabazz just doesn't reliably bring any of those things. And he's so one-dimensional. And he just gets tunnel vision with the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really, you know, the linchpin of the league's worst bench. I mean, that's not all his fault.
Right.
But certainly, you know, he was a part of the struggles of that. So I don't think I would want him back as a sixth man.
Mm-mm.
And maybe if the money was right and no one else bites on him in restricted free agency, which I doubt, then I think it would be fine if you could find a way to make him, like I said, that 8, 9, 10th guy on your team. But I think there are other options out there potentially that could be better.
Yeah. So I guess who comes to mind? If it's not on the roster, which it clearly isn't, who comes to mind?
That's a tough one. I mean, it's not traditional, but I think really if they could find a way to make Gorgui Dieng the sixth man.
Sure.
I mean, I think that would solve that problem very well.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who just rebounds, he can hit shots. I mean, I think he would feast on other teams' second unit
second
big
units.
Men for sure. And in the typical role, though, of, you know, or you look at someone like Andre Iguodala.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what he's done in his career. And that's, you know, what did you think of those Iggy rumors? I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm like one of the biggest Andre Iguodala fans on the planet, so I would be ecstatic if it did happen. Why would he do that? Yeah,
I'm trying to think of his why.
I don't see why he would do it other than because the Wolves would pay him more money than the Warriors could. And
that's going to mean over $20 million a year.
Yeah.
And we're talking about allocating our cap resources better?
Yeah. So, and I just, to me, it just seems like this is all, the rumors that are out there is just sort of leverage to try and get as much money from the Warriors as possible. Because I think he ultimately wants to go back there. And why wouldn't he? I mean.
And it's like, yeah, well, sure, it's easy to say, well, he came off the bench and in Golden State, well, he was winning championships.
Yeah, they were winning.
I mean, that makes such a big difference. I mean, is he going to look at Andrew Wiggins and go, I'm coming off the bench behind him?
Right.
Wiggins is a fine player with a bright future, but I mean, if you're Andre Iguodala now, I mean, are you looking at that as what you want to do at this stage in your career when you still have years of valuable time left?
Yeah. And I mean, I think he's what, 32?
Yeah, about there.
But he's like a young 32 because he's always been a guy that is, I mean, you want to talk about a guy that keeps himself in terrific shape and is...
He's a smart guy, too.
Yeah. I mean, he's got it down to, like, his eating habits and nutrition and all that stuff. Like, he's got it down to a damn science, man. Like, that guy is... He's serious business when it comes to, like, conditioning and all that stuff.
I mean, and what an example you would set with Jimmy and Andre Iguodala, you know, as far as just how to carry yourself as a professional.
Yep.
And I mean, just what you do day in and day out, not just what you do in games, but how you get ready for games and be able to go out there and demonstrate it on the court and show them, you know, what the product of all that work is. Those two would be fantastic together. I just don't see it unless Andre Iguodala goes, you know, I'm tired of winning so much.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't see it.
Yeah. There's no reason for him to come to the Wolves unless it's for money.
And what goes horribly wrong in free agency where he winds up doing that?
Right.
I mean, this team, I mean, they won 31 games last year. It's just going to be so tough to sell a guy at this stage in his career who's likely, you know, he's very likely to go back next year, the next 2-3 years, and get a ring each and every one of those seasons. Granted, the rest of the NBA right now seems hell-bent on stopping the Warriors from winning the next 2-3 titles. But still, as of right now, they have the inside track, and they are the front runners to win the next few titles. So, I mean, there's a lot in that. So even if, you know, you just get the Warriors to make a competitive offer and to get them to stop lowballing you, mm-hmm. I think that's your move right there. So I don't see that. Gosh, we mentioned Patty Mills, but he could very well start on this team.
Yeah, I mean, well, and I guess that would depend on what you do with Ricky, because I don't think, I mean, Patty Mills, you're going to have to give him a little bit of money, but I don't think you're going to have to really break, he doesn't seem like a guy you'd have to really break the bank for.
No.
And it would probably, you know, and him even being available would probably depend on what the Spurs do with the point guard position. If the Spurs go and get George Hill, then I would think it's pretty likely that Patty Mills would be available in free agency. If they don't, they might end up just re-signing him.
What about like a Justin Simmons?
Yeah. He's restricted though, right?
Yeah, but well, here's the thing though. I mean, if they want to make a move for someone else, I mean, they're going to have to do some salary cap gymnastics, and I don't know that they can keep Mills and Simmons.
Right.
So, I mean, that might be another guy who's available for them. If they would have to renounce his rights to clear the cap space and clear his cap hold.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's an option for them. I mean,
I know Powell said that he's going to, you know, I mean, Powell declined his option. He's going to take less money to try and get them, allow them to have more cap space.
But I just don't understand running that back with the front court of Gasol and Aldridge.
I know.
Defensively.
Well, and they're trying to, apparently there's rumors that they're trying to dump Aldridge too, which.
Aldridge wants out.
Yeah.
That's apparently the thing.
How about that? Would you ever think that somebody would want out of San Antonio?
No, not usually.
that's really weird when I saw that. Like, wow, somebody just said somebody apparently wants out of San Antonio.
I mean, Steven Jackson surprisingly wore out his welcome in San Antonio, yeah. even though Pop loved him.
Yeah, you have, you know, guys with, I guess, attitudes that are just like, okay, get out of here. We don't want you here anymore. But for a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge to just, like, apparently want out, that's really strange. Like, especially a guy like him, like, where are you going to go?
Right.
That would be a better situation.
He's still a mid-range shooter. He's become a fine defender. He's an okay defender.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to kill you. But his rebounding's down. His production's been down ever since he got to San Antonio.
Yeah.
I mean, your value isn't high, dude. You really don't have a lot of leverage here.
Right.
I just don't see it. I'm really confused by that.
Yeah, that's weird. All right, let's talk about some of the moves and firings that were made this week. There was just one big firing that was made. Phil Jackson, out.
Wednesday was a big day.
Wednesday was a huge day. And what's amazing is Phil Jackson gets fired Wednesday morning, and by the afternoon, it was kind of still being talked about, but it had been kind of put on the back burner because of the Chris Paul news, which, you know, we'll get to that in a second. But first, Phil out in New York, and I think it's the right move because Phil has been, for the most part, a disaster for 3 years there. I just think the timing of it is horrible.
Shout out to James Dolan.
Yeah.
Well, did you see my tweet?
True to form, James Dolan.
So when this broke on Tuesday evening, Tuesday night, actually, I mean, this took all of 10 hours from start to finish, from the time the news broke that James Dolan was pondering his future and they were going to meet on Wednesday morning to figure out his future. By 7 a.m., 8 a.m., James Dolan had already fired him. Like, this happened really quick.
Yeah.
And you see my tweet on Tuesday night about James Dolan checking in on the Knicks, like that frozen pizza you put in the oven an hour ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what it reminded me of. Like, what's that smell? Oh, crap. And then you just race to the kitchen.
And that's when you open the oven, and it's just like you can't even see in there because it's just charred.
Billowing smoke.
Yeah, smoke from a charred pizza that's just, you know, clouding everything.
So
yeah.
I just picture James Dolan got out of band practice and saw a headline that he had been looking to trade Kristaps Porzingis and was like, wait a minute. What's happening here? And then ran to see, like, okay, what's going on? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And just realizing the total buffoonery and hypocrisy of Phil Jackson that's talking about, you know, with Kristaps, no player had ever skipped exit meetings. Well, Shaq did it to you.
In 2003.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said peace out, and he wasn't doing anything about that, so that's already not true.
Right.
And it just seemed like he was just out on a smear campaign and that they were just already out to, you know, run Kristaps Porzingis out of town and, you know, make him seem like the bad guy before they even traded him.
Yeah.
Just how bad is this? I think what became clear with Phil is that it really seems like he was just, you know, going by in reputation what he had done as a coach. Mm-hmm. And he did fantastic things as a coach.
Yep.
And
I don't think that these last 3 years with the Knicks should tarnish anything he did as a coach. I don't think it has. I don't think the two things have anything to do with each other.
Like, I think we have to separate Isaiah Thomas, the player, from Isaiah Thomas, the executive,
right,
and the coach.
Exactly.
The funny thing is I heard Isaiah Thomas mentioned as a replacement, which is just endlessly funny. But what became apparent to me with Phil, too, was that he was so stuck in the triangle.
Yeah, he could not. He just did not want to move on from that.
He handcuffed Jeff Hornacek with Kurt Rambis as what basically a defensive coordinator, which is hysterical if you remember his work with the 2008-2009 Wolves.
Oh, God.
And was just hell-bent on imposing this triangle, which had only worked twice in the last 35 years, and that was with Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant.
And Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, and they obviously do not have that in New York, and they never built towards that. And what they had before Phil were a bunch of interesting, you know, young players. I mean, it turns out, now that we're a few years away from it, they weren't the most exciting players, but what Phil's done since has only made it worse.
And now you have a situation where whoever his replacement is may not see Frank Ntilikina as a guy that they want as part of the future. I mean, Phil made the decision to take him, and Frank Ntilikina might end up being a terrific player. I mean, I just don't know, but
GMs often, when they come in, new coaches, when they come in, they want their own guy.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
And that's where, to me, like the timing of this, it's the right decision to send Phil packing, but the timing of it is just horrible. Because now, if you're, I mean,
well, it was 3 days before free agency.
Yeah. And now you have, you know, now you've got names, you know, surfacing. I saw Sam Presti's name popped up.
Masai Ujiri was the funny one.
Yeah.
Because if listeners remember, when the Knicks traded two firsts for Andrea Bargnani, and they got a whole bunch of crap for that, a whole bunch of flack, to the point when the Knicks started calling about Kyle Lowry, when Lowry had just got to Toronto, James Dolan backed off because he didn't want to get embarrassed by Masai Ujiri again, even though the deal was great. But I think Masai Ujiri, if you want someone, because I mean, it sounds like, isn't it weird how Madison Square Garden is referred to, basically it's like Knicks ownership and management? It's so bizarre that apparently Madison Square Garden still wants to move Carmelo Anthony, which I think is a smart move.
Yeah.
And I think this makes it more likely. Well, I mean, unless he waives that stupid no trade kicker or that trade kicker.
Which it seems like from based off of, because I heard Stephen A. Smith on Mike and Mike this morning that he said he basically, I think it's something like Carmelo either wants a buyout or he wants to be traded to Houston.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. So it's like he would only accept a trade to Houston, obviously because of the relationship with Chris Paul, which we'll get to in a second. But otherwise, he wants to be bought out and go to Cleveland.
And the Knicks don't want that. And I think that was one of the big reasons for Phil's firing was that Phil was already like, well, let's buy him out. And James Dolan's like, dude, what are you doing? Quit spending my money like this. Quit wasting, you know, he wanted to jettison Kristaps Porzingis, who is the, you know, the brightest young player they've had since Patrick Ewing in town. And it's just like, you look at that, and when James Dolan goes, what are you, incompetent? I mean, that says a lot.
When James Dolan is calling you incompetent, when he is asking if you're incompetent, or if he is asking what the hell is wrong with you, there's something seriously wrong. Okay.
The Knicks are a mess, though. What else is new?
Yeah. Have been for a long, long time. All right. Dwight Howard. We have to get to this because we didn't get to it last week.
The show should almost be named after Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
We didn't get to this last week because it was midnight and we both wanted to go home.
Yeah. We had been in Target Center pretty much all evening. And obviously the Jimmy Butler trade was the biggest news of the night. But so Dwight Howard is a Charlotte Hornet. And I just, at this point, it's just laughable. And I don't mean to make Dwight Howard look like a bad dude. I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's been the greatest teammate in the world. He certainly hasn't been the greatest teammate in the world the last 5-6 years. But this is just, we said last year when he went to the Hawks, we said, okay, if he can't make it work here, then.
I mean, it was painted as a nice, sweet homecoming story. But, you know, what really stood out to me in this trade is that the Hawks received slightly less than the Magic did for prime Dwight. Yeah. I mean, Aaron Aflalo was the biggest piece that they received from the Dwight Howard trade, and then they flipped him, I think, pretty quick after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just funny just how unmovable Dwight's been, even at his best. And I just don't know. I mean, the Hornets are weird, too. I just don't understand the move. I mean, Steve Clifford, he has had just kind of this affection with back-to-the-basket centers. I mean, you look at Roy Hibbert. Last year, they signed him and later traded him, which I guess is smart if you're a non-playoff team. Get an asset, move him for more assets.
Mm-hmm.
Al Jefferson. I mean, this team is just, they haven't really embraced that whole stretch big thing. And that's certainly not going to be Dwight here in Charlotte.
Yeah, this is going to be his fourth team in 6 years. Like, guys like him, players like him are not supposed to be playing for four teams in 6 years.
I mean, to me, he's a no question future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people disagree with that. Well, some people disagree with that because he's been kind of childish at times, or at least in the public's eye.
But you can't take away what he was in Orlando as a player.
Oh, he was sensational.
As a player for, you know, was it 8 years? I mean, you can't. He was unbelievable. That team that got to the finals in 2009, I mean, he was arguably the second best player in the NBA that year.
Oh,
I mean,
that was a legit conversation.
Yeah, I mean, behind only LeBron James at that time. So, I mean, so you can't take that away from him, but just the fact that he's sort of become somewhat of a journeyman now at this stage of his career is just really sad and you know, I just don't know. I mean, he still has. The problem is he still has a lot to offer as a player, but he just, like we've talked about before, he just needs to have more self-awareness of the type of player that he is now.
He can't do that 25-year-old alley-oop stuff anymore. Yeah, he doesn't have that lift.
He's not, Dwight, you're not a 22-15 guy like what you were in Orlando in 2009 when you got to the finals. Like,
with that said, he still is a 12-13 player who shoots 60%.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. He doesn't offer any floor spacing, but there are still things that he can do. He just doesn't understand his limitations in them anymore. I mean, the Hawks were still throwing him alley-oops, and he could. How many times did I text you during the playoffs like, oh my gosh, Dwight Howard's bricking alley-oops now?
Yeah.
Because he just can't get up there anymore.
Doesn't have the same lift.
Well, and that's understandable because his back's been operated on a couple times now.
Yep.
And like, that's difficult stuff. But
like we've talked about, back issues, when you have a professional athlete that has back problems, it is big-time trouble. I mean, we're seeing it with Tiger Woods. I mean, Dwight Howard is obviously, you know, declined as a player because of back issues and
Larry
back surgeries.
Bird's career ended prematurely.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, again, like I said, Tiger Woods is not a good golfer anymore because he's had back problems and knee problems and shoulder problems and
Whites had shoulder problems too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, man. It's I feel like he can help the Hornets. It's just he just has to have an understanding of who he, you know, what he is as a player now, and I don't want to hear anymore Dwight Howard frustrated with his role in the offense. I don't want to hear that anymore.
No.
Like, I'm tired of hearing that. We've been hearing that for like 3 years in a row now. Like I'm tired of hearing that. It's the same thing every single year, and I'm sick of hearing that. So
I mean, his role in that team is clearly defined behind Kemba Walker,
mm-hmm.
Marvin Williams, Courtney Lee is in New York, so not him. But there are so many other options around
Frank
there.
Kaminsky.
Yeah, Kaminsky. I would rather him get touches. Cody Zeller, who now Talk about a good backup center to have.
Yeah, he's I'll be honest, I did not think he was going to
I did not think
he was going to be much in the NBA, to be perfectly honest with you.
You know, I covered the Hornets. I was still covering the Hornets in his rookie season, and he was just a deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
His first few months in the league, and just how much of a well-rounded player he's become and how much he's just understood the game has just been so cool to see from even just his first summer league. And I mean, it was always kind of funny. Like, I remember talking to him in his first summer league, and he was just always like, eh, whatever, it's summer league. I'm just ready for the real games. Like, this doesn't mean as much to me. And it's funny because you talk to, you know, the guys who are just fighting, you know, just to get eyes on them. Hope we land a D-League contract or a training camp invite or, you know, that 15th spot on an NBA roster. I mean, and they're just so much more appreciative. You know, it's part of the journey for them. You know, they really look forward to having something to prove. Cody Zeller, and I think a lot of top lottery picks are like that, where they're like, well, this is just a formality.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's great to see what Cody's become. And I think Charlotte now has a lot of depth there too, which if something does go wrong with Dwight, they actually have a fallback plan.
Yeah. I like to see the Hornets have a bounce back year.
You know, they're almost like they're the Giants, where they're even odd.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they have, I mean, it's the Eastern Conference. So it's the slightly inferior conference. They have good players. You have Kemba, you've got Nick Batum, you've got, you know, you drafted Malik Monk. I think Malik Monk and Kemba might be pretty fun.
That's going to be the all buckets backcourt.
Yeah. I mean, I know Malik is a little undersized for, you know, for a two guard, but
Kemba's,
I feel like,
what, 6'2"?
Yeah, 6'1", 6'2"-ish. I feel like those two could be a lot of fun in the backcourt.
Just to interject real quick, Ramona Shelburne reports that former Cavs GM David Griffin has been in touch with the Knicks and will be among the franchise's initial interviews. That wouldn't be a bad hire with how he put together that team in Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah, that would, I would be worried about him. Not that I think he would do a bad job. I just worry about anybody who, I'm going to worry about anybody who takes this Knicks job, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, especially since, you know, Griffin just got done dealing with the buffoonery of another owner, Dan Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
Does he want to go work for an owner that might be even more difficult to work with and more unpredictable? I mean, that's just not an enviable position to be in. But on the other hand, there's a finite number of GM jobs. This isn't like, well, I'll just look for a job out of state. I'll look for a job somewhere else. No, these are the jobs. Do you want one? Because here's one.
If you're Dan Gilbert, and I know we're going to get out of here in a second, but if you're
Chris Paul.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even talked the Chris Paul trade yet, have we?
No.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick. We can get to Dan Gilbert next week. Wow. When I saw it, I was like, okay, this will be an interesting dynamic.
I got the notification on my phone. I had to reread it like four times before I could comprehend what it meant. I was like, they traded Chris Paul? I mean, it was just, it's a wild story, and I thought it was kind of cool that Chris Paul actually let the Clippers know ahead of time, hey, I'm leaving, I want to go to Houston.
Yeah.
So, you know, get something for me now. And that way Chris Paul still gets his money, and it's like, does this guy need an agent? Because
he's a smart guy, man.
As the head of the players union, he basically negotiated for the supermax that he's going to receive from probably the Rockets,
mm-hmm.
which is why he wanted to go there. And then he orchestrates his own trade out of L.A. And there are a lot of layers to that, too, which I think are just fascinating.
Yeah, the rumor about the rift between him and Doc Rivers, and, you know, he was upset because Doc, you know, showed favoritism towards Austin and, you know, all of that. And
there are other rumors
about
Doc Rivers, though, that apparently that some Clippers players are a little tired of Doc.
Yeah. Which is another, like you said, another layer to that whole thing with the Clippers. I mean, where do they go? I mean, if obviously, you know, I heard Doc today say, you know, they're obviously going to try and re-sign Blake Griffin. But now it's like, okay, well, what's going to happen with, you lost Chris Paul, so what's going to happen with the point guard position? Are you going to have Patrick Beverley running the show? You're going to have Austin Rivers running the show? What, you know, where are they going to go? Are they going to look outside to try and get somebody? I don't know. But the Clippers are going to be an interesting team to watch this offseason.
I mean, getting Lou Williams back, Sam Decker is a nice young player. I mean, they got some guys who can play. They got a bunch of non-guaranteed contracts as a part of the five trades Daryl Morey made. The salary cap gymnastics he did to make this trade happen.
Did you see the Lou Williams tweet today, by the way?
Oh, he's been on fire.
Yeah. He took a little dig at analysts and certain members of the media. He didn't name anybody specific.
He did quote tweet a media member, though.
Yeah, who was it?
I'd never heard of him.
Okay.
But it's just like, you know, I don't take offense to that stuff because I don't think that players mean, you know, all media are just nerds who have never stepped on a basketball court and don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
I think it's just the people that, you know, step to players like that and who do take a confrontational approach. You know, and if you do that to anyone, and I mean, I think we see it on Twitter where people are like, oh, wow, so thin skinned, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah. Well, no, if you're rude to someone, don't be surprised when, you know, they're rude back to you. You haven't just earned that.
Exactly.
So I think, you know, when players see that, you know, a media member takes, except, you know, has that arrogance in approaching a player like they're smarter than them, you know, I think that they do take exception to that. And I would, too. I would have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But as far as one talk fit with Houston?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting because I think Chris Paul, James Harden, and Mike D'Antoni are all going to have to make an adjustment. And I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm not saying it's not going to work. I learned my lesson on doubting Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets last offseason because I thought they were going to be terrible this year. And they were great. So I'm not going to doubt that they can make this work.
Does it help for you to know that Chris Paul and James Harden had basically negotiated this in advance and they like, hey, we should play together. This would be a great thing. Does that help you out?
It does. It does. But I also know that, I mean, Chris Paul has been the guy with the ball in his hands all the time since he entered the league.
He's kind of a control freak and a competitive person too.
Yeah, and I mean, and James Harden was sort of just this past season was handed that exact same role within the Rockets offense. So I kind of feel like James Harden can make that adjustment a little easier. But I think the question is Chris Paul really going to be willing to defer to James Harden enough to really make it work? And I'm not saying he won't. I'm not saying that he can't. But I think that's going to be the biggest key to them making this work is if there's going to have to be some sacrifices, I think, from both of those guys. And, I mean, Mike D'Antoni, he's going to have to figure out the best way for that to work.
He's been a very rigid guy. And I mean, in the past, he's had players who have been good, useful players. But if they don't fit what he wants to do, he has no use for them. He doesn't know what to do with them.
Right.
So he's very much been the coach who gets players to adapt to him rather than the other way around, which I think is preferable, especially given how, you know, NBA coaches don't really have all that job security. But I think, you know, I had the same thought as you. I mean, these are James Harden and Chris Paul are two players. They are among the best ball handlers in the league.
Yep.
Two guys that you want the ball in their hands as much as possible. And I think that's how you're maximizing both of those players is when they have the ball in their hands. But on the other hand, they're also very smart players. I mean, these are also two of the best players in the game. So if they think that, you know, they can play off ball and make that work, I think it can be done. I mean, James Harden hasn't always had the ball. He's been the primary ball handler. But I think, you know, if you have him on the court at the same time, I think that really makes your offense more dynamic because either one of those guys can pick and roll you to death, no problem. And I think the other advantage to that, too, is that there's never any reason to rest both Harden and Chris Paul unless you're up by 40 with 8 minutes to play. And I think when you come playoff time, look at what the Spurs did to them. I mean, they took away the Rockets' three-point line, which, you know, is where they feast. I mean, they feast at the rim, and they feast on the three-point line. They forced them to be a jump-shooting mid-range team, and they couldn't do it. Chris Paul is one of the best mid-range shooters in the game. So if you really want to make Chris Paul square up for mid-range,
right,
that's going to free up everything else so much for this team.
And I think with James Harden, too, I mean, we saw I mean, he was awful in that game six where they got knocked out by San Antonio. I think if you get a situation where you're taking some of the workload off of him because you have Chris Paul, I think that can really help him over the course of a season too, and help him stay fresh through a playoff run, a deep playoff run potentially.
Yep. Well, I think he just has more help now. I mean, that Rockets team was fantastic last year. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it, you know, he didn't have that top five. I don't think he had as much help as Chris Paul had.
Yeah.
As far as upper echelon NBA talent around him. So going from Lou Williams to Chris Paul is huge. Going from Patrick Beverley to Chris Paul is huge.
Yeah. And, so it should be fun.
What I think is kind of crazy, too, is that apparently Daryl Morey's not done stargazing. I mean, we've heard Carmelo Anthony. We've heard Paul George. I don't know how they do either of those things because now they've traded their pick 2 years in a row. Well, they did some sort of way to flip it so that it works with the rules. Yeah. So they'd have to trade a 2019, 2020, something like that pick down the road. So I don't know if that actually has any value to
Pacers. What's their cap situation? I mean, obviously you're absorbing Chris Paul's contract.
They'd probably have to send out Ryan Anderson,
mm-hmm.
which I think you do in a heartbeat for Paul George, and you probably do it for Carmelo Anthony.
Yep.
Just because, I mean, Melo hasn't really been a beacon of health himself, but
I think even if it's a 1 year rental, Paul George, I think you do it.
I don't think Ryan Anderson stops you from doing that.
No, not at all.
So I mean, you get Paul George, you have some success, and you say, hey, you want to keep doing this? And you convince him to stay. So, I mean, I think it reminds me of what I can't remember who the general manager of the St. Louis Cardinals was in 1995 or 96 when they got Mark McGwire.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this was our best chance to convince him to stay, was to trade for midseason, take a risk. Yep. And sure enough, he stayed. So I think if you can do that with a guy like Paul George, I think it's worth a shot.
Yeah. The Houston Rockets. Wow. It's, you know, it's funny. I was watching highlights from the 95 NBA Finals the last couple days. Just
those are
a couple
fun
games, you know, here and there. You know, game one where they came back from down big and Hakeem had the tip back in to win game one, and then Kenny Smith going off for 7 threes in game two. So I love those days of the Rockets. But these Rockets should be fun, though. So.
It should. I don't think it makes the league or the West any, you know, more competitive, adds any parity. Well, not that I really care about parity, but makes the West tougher at the top and more competitive. And I think that's what we really need in the league right now, is someone who can make a legitimate run at the Warriors and,
push,
you know,
them
make them
bit.
Sweat this time.
Yeah. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast, of course, at iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a 5-star rating. You can find us at podcast1.com. And of course, at 1500ESPN.com. We'll be back next week, and hopefully we'll have some free agent signings to talk about with the Wolves, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to discuss because there will be some names that'll come off the free agent market come Saturday. So we'll talk to you then.